Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Katie Lambert.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy. And one of our absolute favorite podcasts was What Happened to Cleopatra's Children. We chose it because we really like Cleopatra.
And Juba too.
And Juba too, because he's our favorite historical personage. But we also chose it because we wanted to learn more about Cleopatra's personal life and that of her children. But consequently, we learned a little bit about her struggle against Rome too.
And she is not the only woman who stood up to Rome. Another woman who has is our subject for today's podcast. And I'll let Aurelian give her introduction with this quote. "How, O Zenobia, hast thou dared to insult Roman emperors? And how indeed?" So a little bit about who she was. She was a 3rd century queen of Palmyra, which today is Syria. And she was a warrior queen. She conquered again and again until she came up against Aurelian. She also styled herself like Cleopatra, who she viewed somewhat as a role model, and did a lot of building her own legend in her own time. There are all these stories about her, you know, about her being this gorgeous woman with her dark brown skin and her pearly white teeth, but she was someone who could drink with the boys and also used sex as a weapon within the bounds of her marriage.
So, of course, this kind of woman gets written about. Boccaccio and Chaucer write about her. Chaucer mentions her in The Monk's Tale.
So a little bit about who she is. Zenobia has two names. In Latin, it's Septimia Zenobia, and in Aramaic, it's Batsabai. She was Arab, but she may also have been Aramean. And some have said she was Jewish because she treated the Jews of Alexandria well. But other historians have made a point, like Antonia Fraser, that says a lot about Jews in history and their persecution. If you assume just because someone was nice to a group
to be
of people,
Jewish. They
must have been part of the group.
So Zenobia's mother may have been Egyptian. Her father was definitely a wealthy, educated Arab merchant aristocrat. And we've mentioned Cleopatra a few times now. Zenobia wanted to be like Cleopatra. She's her role model. She says she's descended from her by Juba II, of course. She probably isn't, but she still just seizes on this potential ancestor.
To align herself with and to kind of put herself in that mold.
Well, and just as Cleopatra tries to align herself with Isis, the goddess Isis, Zenobia has this more modern version.
So we should talk a little bit more about Palmyra and what this kingdom is that she has. It's also known by its more ancient name, Todmor, the city. And then the 3rd century BC is when it became important, and that's because of the city's location in relation to trade. It's between the Mediterranean and the Euphrates on an oasis.
So it was linked by caravan routes to Phoenicia, Emesa, and Damascus. So it's really linking Mesopotamia to the east here. And as far as trade goes, it's a good place to be. Camels, another favorite topic of ours.
Podcast theme.
Are bringing in silk and jade from China. Spices and ebony are coming in from India. And these wealthy merchant aristocrats who live there are oftentimes patrons of the art as well.
In AD 114, Palmyra is technically part of the Roman Empire, but Hadrian gave them a lot of freedom. He even let them levy their own municipal taxes, which was a big deal. And Palmyra is valuable to the Roman Empire because it connects them to the east, and also because of their military prowess. The Palmyrian archers were considered pretty amazing, and the Romans were hoping to use them against the Parthians.
So Palmyra eventually becomes a colony, so they get an even better deal than they have, and they gain more freedom from Rome. And Rome puts Zenobia's husband, Odenat or Odenathus, maybe, in charge. And they're too busy dealing with the Goths. The Roman emperors are too busy.
Right, so they want someone else who's watching over the eastern provinces
the terrain
for them while they're fighting battles on their other borders. And Odenathus does the empire a service. The emperor Valerian has been defeated, captured, and killed in a gory way by King Sapor of Persia. Some say he was forced to swallow molten gold. And it looks like Persia is going to take over these eastern provinces, but Odenathus manages to repel them. However, he is assassinated in 266 or 267, as is his heir from his first marriage. So who killed them?
Yeah, that's our big question here. This guy's at the height of his glory, and he's assassinated.
There's good reason to believe it could have been Zenobia, because next in line for the throne is her kid, Babylathus Athenodorus. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, which is entirely likely. And then she would be regent for him. Or it could also have been the Romans, who may not have been happy with this self-styled king taking over large parts of their empire.
Well, and who's getting quite proud of himself, too.
So Zenobia becomes regent and immediately attacks Egypt. Rome is busy again fighting the Goths. And in 269, she's conquered most of Egypt and annexed most of Syria. And by 270, she's into Asia Minor. So Palmyra now goes from Egypt to the Bosphorus, including Syria, Mesopotamia, Palestine, Northern Arabia, Egypt, and a big part of Asia Minor.
So she's controlling this huge amount of territory and all of the trade routes that go through it, which is the really crucial thing here. Rome totally depends on Egypt for corn. So if you have Zenobia shutting you out of Egypt, you're in a mess of trouble. So this is bad news for Rome.
But again, they're dealing with other things on other fronts. They don't have the time or the energy to devote to Zenobia until she declares that she is independent from Rome. She's no longer a part of their empire. And in 271, she has money made with her and her son's image, which is basically just a declaration of war.
It reminds me again of Cleopatra, too.
Oh, exactly. So the Palmyrenes go to the oracles to find out about the future of their empire. And it does not go well, to say the very least. The oracle at Apollo Sarpedonius tells them their inquiry is basically an insult, and the oracle at Venus Aphocytus won't even take their offerings.
Yeah, didn't you say it floats there?
Yeah, this is a bad, bad omen for the Palmyrenes.
It reminded us of the specters that when Darnley rides
into whenever
town.
Ghostly specters happen, it's just bad news. But Rome has a new emperor in 270, Aurelian, and he's tired of Zenobia's shenanigans and marches to Asia Minor.
So the Palmyrenes face Aurelian outside of Antioch.
And the Palmyrenes had this awesome line of archers, with the cavalry behind it and then the infantry behind that. But the cavalry had a bad habit of getting overzealous and just losing touch with what else was going on, according to Antonia Fraser's book,
Warrior
Queens.
The Romans know this.
Yes, and so they get tricky, and they pretend to retreat, hoping that the cavalry will follow them, which they do. And they then have the cavalry and the riders running around in the desert until they get tired, at which point they surround them and kill them all.
So Zenobia is obviously in trouble at this point. She heads to Emesa. She has Aurelian in pursuit of her. And each side has about 70,000 men, which is a truly large number.
And they catch up with her, and the Romans win. They were simply the better army. There are dead men and horses, you know, littering the countryside. And Zenobia flees again. She goes back to Palmyra, which is about 100 miles from where they are. She's probably hoping the distance and the terrain and the heat are going to keep Aurelian from getting to her. But he makes it, and then she's stuck. She's in this isolated area. She's got nowhere else to go, and he sets up a blockade.
And famine sets in pretty soon. And the two write each other, Zenobia and Aurelian, and he tells her to surrender and offers her pretty good terms. But she refuses absolutely and defiantly. She will not surrender to the emperor.
And she leaves the city. The snottier interpretation of it is that she was just trying to escape and she was leaving her people to their fate. But some people say she was going to try to get help from Persia against Aurelian. Either way, she's caught at the Euphrates and she's brought to Emesa. Palmyra falls, and now she has to deal with Aurelian.
So Aurelian is not happy that all of this trouble happened over a woman, and he gives all these speeches basically trying to justify fighting a woman, essentially, you know, saying, well, she's a woman, but she really has a lot of the qualities of a man. Just trying to make himself
look better,
look a little better.
But then she goes back with the classic trick of saying, well, I'm just a weak woman, and it was men who tricked me, and, you know, this was none of my own doing. I didn't even write that defiant letter. It was the scholar instead. The poor scholar is executed. And she plays her cards well. She is taken as a captive to Rome in this giant parade that Aurelian sets up.
In addition to having Zenobia wearing tons of jewels, pounds of them, and gold shackles, the triumph also features elephants and giraffes and gladiators and ambassadors, captives wearing placards. So
I really liked that detail. They've got people, all sorts of captives that Aurelian's gotten, even though, you know, Zenobia is captive number one,
yeah,
but
they
all
star.
Have signs around their necks saying like Amazon or something, except for Zenobia, who doesn't need them with the pounds of jewels.
So it's like an exotic natural history triumph.
I really wish I'd been there. But she goes off to live the rest of her life rather quietly. She married a Roman senator and went to live in a villa in the countryside, and that's pretty much the end of what you hear about Zenobia.
So this slow denouement of her life contrasts really interestingly to that of Cleopatra, who knows how to go out with a bang, or a bite, rather.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I find it so interesting that somebody who has modeled her life so closely on that of Cleopatra is willing to give it up in the end and admit her defeat, I guess.
Another interesting thing about Zenobia versus other warrior queens throughout history, like Boudica, and again, I'm going to Antonia Fraser's book, Warrior Queens, is that her military pursuits weren't about righting wrongs or any sort of...
They weren't moral.
No, they were completely about ambition, pure burning ambition. And, you know, then she ends up in her little villa in the countryside, I guess, accomplishing what she could.
Well, and that fits into this legend building that we were talking about earlier that surrounds her, this ambition to not only conquer territories, but build herself up into this consequently mythical personage. She's done such a good job at her own legend building that she seems kind of false almost. She seems like the perfect character for like a made-for-TV movie or something.
I would absolutely go see that movie. But that brings us to listener mail. And today, listener mail is a little bit different. We're not going to give you anyone's names, but we had a listener write to us, and he said, please, please, in caps, no more women's history. And we're sorry to say that that's not going to happen.
Not at all.
I think when a lot of people think of women's history, they think of a Jane Austen novel come to life. People sitting in sitting rooms and talking about manners and things. And we don't want to discount those stories because those stories are important. And we will continue.
We would love to talk about someone like Jane Austen, too.
We do. We would love Jane Austen. But there are also other stories that don't get covered as often and things that you do miss in history, like Zenobia, who I certainly never encountered before today, someone who was working very much in a male sphere.
So since we're not willing to discount 51% of history, you should send us your favorite women's history topics, or any history, because we're always open to it all, to historypodcast@howstuffworks.com.
And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're at Mist in History. And if you would like to learn more about women in history, you should check out our website at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action, and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network. Work.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.